Welcome to the Big Beatles Sort Out. In the first series, I, author and musician Gary Abbott, ranked all the Beatles' core catalogue releases with the help of my Beatles expert brother Paul. In series two, we worked our way through an assortment of added Beatles goodies, such as Live at the BBC, the anthology series and the movies. And now for series three, we're looking at all the post-Beatles singles released in the decade following their breakup. As with series one, we will take five songs in random order each week and score them for music, production and lyrics to find the best post-Beatles Beatles hits. Thanks for joining us as we try and sort out The Beatles. Welcome to Series 3, Episode 18, and welcome to Paul. How are you, Paul?
I'm all right. Hello. Are you okay?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Why have you got a dog trapped in your back garden, Gary?
I haven't, and if you hear anything, it wasn't a dog.
If you hear anything, it wasn't a dog.
Exactly. Right, let's just move on. No, I should apologise in case you hear what can only be a neighbour's dog barking loudly outside, because I have cats and they don't bark.
No.
One of the many benefits of cats.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Are you all right?
Yeah. Can you guess what I'm drinking this week? This is my new feature. What's Paul drinking?
Right, let me think. Are you drinking a lemon tea?
No, I'm not.
Are you having another guess? Are we going to carry on till I get it? Are you drinking Mbongo?
No. You only drink that in the Congo, as sort of racist adverts suggested.
But that's all the drinks.
lemon tea and Mbongo.
Yeah.
No, I'm drinking a Holy Faith Hazy Pale Ale alcohol-free beer from Northern Monk, and it's very nice.
Oh.
Really? I'm going to keep mentioning the name of alcohol-free beers I'm drinking until someone sends me some.
I don't know if we if we cast that far. We're yet get our sponsorship
boxes. I haven't fully forsworn drinking, but I barely drink now. So I am doing these deep investigations into the world of alcohol-free beers. And there is actually some very nice ones out there, of which this is one.
You should rate them for crispness, tastiness and scent and start a podcast about it.
No.
Big beer sort out. Brackets 0%.
I'm sure there's some podcasts by men with very trimmed beards that are stuff about that already.
You get those drinking podcasts, don't you, where people just get progressively drunk. You could do the same thing but with alcohol-free beer and it wouldn't really work.
Progressively need the toilet more and more.
Yeah. Anyway, let's do the usual podcast bump. Don't forget you can keep in touch with us at @big_sort on Twitter and Instagram or by email to bigbeatlessortout@gmail.com. And do please drop us a review on whatever platform you're listening on if you can. And come and find us on social media and like and share our posts. Please check the episode descriptions for the links to our various music projects and other projects. That's that. So, Paul, let's go straight into On This Beatles Day, which should be the 27th of February.
Indeed. And I have picked a date from the 1970s. I've picked the 27th of February, 1971. Because that is a day where, if you didn't know it already, or you hadn't suspected it already, you could pick up your newspapers and essentially find out that the Beatles are no more.
Of course.
Now, they're not legally no more on that date, but it's the day that the newspapers report, from a couple of days before, some of the stuff that had been going on in the High Court that week.
Right.
So none of the Beatles actually turn up at this point, and Paul is actually over in America. So there's statements read out during the week from John, George and Ringo, and then there's a sort of letter evidence from Paul as well. Mm. And it's that which is the trigger for the news reports on the 27th of February 1971. So like in the Times, the headline for that little bit is group, quote, no longer thought of as the Beatles.
Right.
And it's all about what Paul's saying and about his written evidence, which is a lot about Alan Klein. Getting up in the mix.
Yeah.
And, so then, like, the International Herald Tribune, McCartney again says Beatles are finished as unit. That's the headline to their little report about it as well. And then, of course, some newspapers go with headlines like, why Yoko upset a Beatle? And go for the implication Paul is saying that Yoko broke up the group.
The group, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I could have lost my ability to speak then. So, yeah, the Daily Mirror is like, why Yoko upset a Beatle.
I think your inability to speak was because of the phrasing of that headline. Why Yoko upset a Beatle?
Headlines are written in headline ease.
Yeah.
So it's always a bit weird.
Hmm.
But it's because, in Paul's deposition, he talks about how George reacted to certain scenarios and things like that. And he refers to how Klein had claimed that the real trouble is Yoko and she is the one with ambition. And Paul's using this as sort of ammunition in his court case as well. And it's coming across in some of these newspapers as Yoko did it.
Mm.
Which is a funny thing. I was doing this research basically on her 90th birthday the other day.
Yeah, yes.
So,
happy birthday.
Merry birthday, Yoko. Yeah, the Daily Mail goes with Yoko caused breakup.
Mm, what a surprise.
And then what else have we got? Yoko Ono, the real trouble court hears from the Daily Telegraph. Shock, horror, you know. Mm. And then you get some weird things like in the Daily Mirror, in the Weekend Mirror, Saturday Scene by Don Short, you have Pop Circular, All They Need Is Love. And I love this. You can see the crowbar marks around the edge of this article. Italian pop fans, like many others across the world, are mystified by the Daily Chronicle of the Beatles' High Court happenings.
Mm.
Repeatedly, I am asked, how can such good friends do this? It's like, this isn't actually about the Beatles. It's about some Italian pop fans asking this journalist why friends fall out.
Mm.
But it's interesting because he goes on to say, it is now clear that the true symbol of the Beatles was more than their music, their friendship. It was a bond, and in the eyes of the world, it is broken.
Yeah.
Which is true, and I think that sort of sums up what a lot of people's sadness was, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
a shame for something to end on an acrimonious note, isn't it?
Four young men loved by a nation and the world now appear as sad, pathetic pawns in a situation to shroud their music in a melancholy chill.
Blimey.
Cheer up, Don Short, Saturday Scene, Weekend Mirror. Yeah, so it's all over the newspapers. And then elsewhere in the Daily Mirror, there's an article that's got the headline, On a Note of Hope. Bob Hope will be doing a topical stand-up routine in the last of the Cilla Black shows next month with cracks about Britain's postal strike, decimalisation, the Beatles and hot pants.
Wow. Well, there we go.
Apparently written by Dennis Goodwin, who used to be Bob Monkhouse's comedy partner for a while.
I'd quite like to see that segment now.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's available, but yeah.
Oh, well, what an interesting time to have been alive if you had have been alive then.
Yeah, if you were a Beatles fan and you were just, you know, desperately hoping, these are not headlines to give you hope that the Beatles are going to suddenly sort of go, oh, it's all right.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that it's done with at that point, isn't it?
Yeah.
But as we know, they went on individually to produce some varied and interesting music over the following decade.
That's a good description of what's coming out of this episode.
so shall we have a listen to some of it and see what we think. Why don't we start first with Bangladesh, George Harrison.
Now I'm asking home, help us save some.
Bangladesh, Paul.
Well, we are dealing with what is ostensibly, by most easily done measurements, the first ever charity single.
Right.
Yes, of course, there had been records before this that were raising money for things, but in terms of sort of the modern pop charity single, Bangladesh takes that, you know, award.
Right.
Which is very interesting, because you think of the power the Beatles had as a group.
Yeah.
And the causes that the sort of general political causes they sort of went towards and attitudes. Obviously, they all became in their own way politically different after the breakup. But this is a demonstration of George doing something actively to react to a situation which is both a disaster reactive and political.
Mm.
So I'm not going to be able to do all of the history of the country of Bangladesh.
You're not living up to your What job is it?
No, but okay. Basically, well, the single is Bangladesh. The flip side is a song called Deep Blue. It comes out on the 28th of July 1971 on Apple. Gets to number 10 in the UK and stays in the charts for 9 weeks. Recorded in LA at the Record Plant on the 4th, 5th and 10th of July. Mm-hmm. Written by George, produced by George and Phil Spector. So it's got that very early 70s George feel to it.
Yeah.
And it is a charity single, and obviously it's also associated very closely with the concerts for Bangladesh that George put on, which are, again, the first sort of big celebrity coming together to raise money for a cause. So, Bangladesh was essentially, at this point, a new country. You have a place called East Pakistan, which is sort of riven with this sort of war for independence, and they sort of declare themselves a new country on the 26th of March, 1971. And there's lots and lots of deaths from the fighting. I mean, hundreds of thousands. But also, the year before, they'd had this cyclone, the Bohol cyclone had hit, which displaced millions of people. So you have millions of people who lose their homes, and there's more torrential rain and flooding, which means that, you know, crops are destroyed. So the food supply is gone. Spreads disease. People are trying to pour into India to get away from this. So it's absolute horrible. It's a terrible, terrible disaster. It's so many things all happening to a bunch of people at once. And what happens is, this is the area of the, sort of the Indian subcontinent that Ravi Shankar comes from.
All right.
So he says to George, "Is there something you can do?" And George's reaction is, write a song to raise money.
Yeah. And which so is probably the right reaction of someone who's a songwriter and performer.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I think if this had happened while the Beatles were still a going concern, they wouldn't have done that. They never did anything like that.
No, but it's different when you're four people compared to one. George can decide his, make his mind up about it and not have to worry
about
anyone.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
He doesn't have to worry about the machine that is the Beatles.
Yeah, and how it would reflect back on them as a whole.
And would they be expected to do it for everything then? And would the whole, everything that surrounds them as a...
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say something better than an empire, but you know what I mean?
As an entity, as a sort of whole. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But yeah, he goes out and he does this, and he does this as a charity single to raise money for UNICEF.
Yeah.
And then he does the concerts for Bangladesh, which is two shows on the 1st of August. So this comes out on the 28th of July. The show's on the 1st of August at Madison Square Garden, which is George plus Ravi Shankar and lots of other famous people. And so the lineup on this song is George on vocals and guitars, Leon Russell on piano, and that's quite a big significant part of the song.
Yeah.
Jim Horn doing the saxophones, Billy Preston on organ, Klaus on bass. The bass is really good on this.
Yeah.
And then you have both Ringo and Jim Keltner on drums, which is sort of need for that Phil Spectorism, that big double drummer thing going on.
A strange double drummer thing. That seems to be something Ringo brings with him there. From the sound
The combination of Ringo and Jim Keltner is a common one on quite a few of these records, isn't it?
It's a strange thing I find that he kind of lost his confidence and felt like he needed doubling up or decided it was something. I don't know, whatever it was. Anyway, that's Ringo, who's brought that to this. It's definitely a brand new one on me, this. Never heard this before. And it's interesting trying to nail down where it's coming from as far as musically. I know where it's coming from as far as it's lyrically, obviously. I mean, forgetting the kind of intro, which is something we'll probably talk more about in the lyrics, because it's just a sang intro, isn't it? Kind of over the kind of chords.
Yeah, you've got a little sort of little header piece to sort of set up the main song.
When it kicks in, you get something a bit like, I want to say, it's got that kind of feel to it of something like I Will Survive or Hotel California. It's got that almost
something
like
very moody.
Yeah, moody. Got a Spanishy feel to it because of the horns, I think.
Oh, right. Okay.
Do you think there's a bit of a... There's a... I don't know.
I kind of get what you mean. Tijuana Brass. But it's... I roughly know what you mean. It's a minor key song with a couple of weird Georgisms.
It might be more kind of... Something like... grasping at things here. Like like something you'd expect the sound of on a Quentin Tarantino soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But and also some of the chords are doing that as well, other than the Georgisms, because it's a classic one of George's chord rounds where it feels like there's at least one more chord change than you'd normally expect there to be, and not every chord change to land where you'd normally expect them to land, you know, as we've...
Shall I do it, Gary? Shall I get the guitar bit out of the way?
Gosh, go on then. Get the guitar feature out of the way.
Yeah, so the Georgism in this one, I would say, is... Because it's in A minor, and so it's using a lot of A minors in E7th, which is very commonly combined. So you have basically... I'm not going to play the whole thing, because the chord lengths are quite long in these.
Yeah.
But it's like... All right, so far. Then he goes.
Yes.
It's that weird step up that's in there all of a sudden, then back to an E.
I mean, it's a skill. It's a skill of his, because it's hard to do that kind of thing with a chord and then really get your brain to go in that direction when you're singing stuff. And it just seems natural to him, but it's obviously not natural, as natural to everyone listening, because that's not what you're expecting.
Yeah, it plays sort of havoc with the harmonic sort of system you'd expect for a piece in A minor, but it's, like you say, classic George.
Yeah, I like the piano in it. There's some really good playing in there, which we've mentioned. You know, the bass, I don't mind it, but I do think it's trying to make something more of the song than the song is. So the bass is going really frenetic and almost funk-like, and it's moving constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think there's any... I think it needs more drums backing it up to... I think it's the only thing really doing that.
You've already got two drummers going.
I know, but neither of them are doing... Like, if it was doing, like, 16ths on the cymbals, like... But it's not. So you've got, like, a bass kind of feel like he's... I feel like it's a bit trying to push it along a little bit, but... I have a slight musical problem with it. I don't think the song knows where it wants to be. It's a dramatic song in a minor key... With a kind of, that Tijuana feel and Georgism changes that keep it rolling along. And occasionally there's a major chord here and there for a very strange change, but it's not clear if there's a chorus as such again.
I think the problem it has musically is that it doesn't have a hook. So the first
no
time that piano comes in, doing that bit, you think, well, that's going to be the hook between the verses, and it never comes back again.
No.
So the only hook to this is George singing the Bangladesh, Bangladesh, you know, going up like that. Better than that, of course, obviously. But that's weird. It doesn't have anything to unify it.
No, it doesn't deliver a chorus. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It doesn't deliver
things
it
sort
natural.
Of come in between verses and then go away and don't come back again. Like there's a tiny bit of George slide guitar in there.
Yeah.
And it's really good, but it's a tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah. I've put the here, the solos are good.
Yeah, they are.
And George's melody is good in places, but it's. I think his voice is just on the verge on this one. It sounds a bit throaty.
A bit like mine tonight, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Well, I find it strange coupling this with the theme of the song as well, but then it is a pioneering here, so you have to forgive a bit of
like
delivering the right tone for something that he couldn't really model it on something else. We'll talk more about that in lyrics. But, I've given it 68 for music because I think it's all right. If it didn't have the message attached to it, I'd think it was kind of an all right album song. But I wouldn't be thinking, I'd be like, oh, I'll stick that out.
One thing I will say I think I'm pleased is he could easily have got Ravi in to do a load of Indian sounds on it, which would have been sort of, kind of geographically appropriate.
Mm.
I mean, there's obviously this is a place of conflict and stuff like that, and India isn't Bangladesh, you know.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do that, and I think that's right. It keeps it as a pop single.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sort of try and make it sort of cynically, you know, this sort of genre identifier of like the region.
It's not appropriating culture, but although it would have been one of the most forgivable if he had, I suppose.
Yeah, so really
anyway, production. I mean, I like the general sound of it all. Other than I say, I think George's voice is struggling again. It's on the verge.
Well, it's struggling against the mix because it's those Phil Spector mixes.
Yeah.
George's voice can't get through.
And also, there's a lot of horn stuff. I'm getting a bit sax weary now. Sax weary. I'm getting weary of sax. Because there's nothing wrong with how it's recorded. I'm just, every song, every other song in this series is, oh, here's the sax solo.
Yeah. It's the 1970s, there's a saxophone solo.
Yeah, I like the, I say, even though I think the bass part might not always work for me because it's the only thing really doing it, I like how it sounds, the recording of it, and the piano sounds really good, and the slide guitar, when it comes in, is again, very nice as usual. There's something like a tom or something in the left ear all the
way.
Well,
that's what I think, the way the drums have been divided up, is you've got, on the right-hand side, you've got what I assume is Ringo doing a bit more of a straight-ahead thing. A few nice little fills sort of pop out of it, but more sort of hi-hat, snare, kick drum thing. And on the other side, from about two or three lines into the main bit of the song, I presume it's Jim Keltner is doing a sort of tom-tom pattern
thing. Well, that's the thing. And I think that might be the bit that's meant to be, that the bass is locking into, but you don't really realise it's there till a bit into the song. It doesn't... I think the bass needs to lock into something, and that's what that part's trying to do. And I thought it might be toms, but it sounds more tribal than funky. You know, I don't know if those lock in right, but it doesn't fit in necessarily. I don't feel right in the left ear anyway. But it sounds pretty good, so I've given it 74 for production.
All I ever want to do on these is get in there and just turn the dials down for, like, the saturation of effects on it. You know, turn them to a sort of drier setting.
Yeah.
Just so everything doesn't wash over everything else.
Yeah, that's how you mean everything that Phil Spector goes anywhere near. It's just dial it all
down. And I've said it before for George's stuff, and I'm sure I'll say it again.
Yeah, probably. Okay, then. On to lyrics. So, this is going to be hard for me to score without sounding like a heartless, horrible person, isn't it? Because it's such a strange single. Go on, Paul, what are you going to say?
Shall I give you the I, Me, Mine information from George's book?
Yeah, go on. This might help or hinder. Go on.
So it said, I got tired of people saying, but what can I do? Also, the reluctance of the press to report the full details created the need to bring attention to it. So the song Bangladesh was written specifically to get attention to the war prior to the concert. Leon Russell suggested I did something in the beginning, and that's the intro verse. But he does say, another thing about Bangladesh and India was that everyone kept buying rice and shipping it to India, but most of it would disappear. And then the government would end up with it, and then they would sell it in its government shops, and then the rest would be shipped back to Western cities to be sold, which is what he's talking about in the song Miss Odell, when he talks about the rice.
Okay, right.
So he's talking, you know, the political issues here.
Yeah, well, that's
transferred into another song as well.
Something that's leveled today, isn't it, at charities?
The way,
and,
how aid gets to places.
Is
and
it
where
getting
it gets
through?
Diverted.
Is it going to the right people and all this kind of stuff? Yeah, it's can be used. It's a valid concern, but it can also be used as a reason to kind of withdraw aid, can't it, as well? You know, it doesn't even get through, you know, and it's going to... So, well, okay, we'll just stop trying altogether then, shall we? But you know, I think the thing is with this, it's the first one, like you say. I mean, there's not many single-issue songs out there to compare it to. The only one that jumps to mind is Free Nelson Mandela, where you've got such a stated, you know, not songs that are there to support a cause, but a song where the lyrics are literally about it as well. You know, so in later years, as we know, you know, the songs might be a bit more generalised, or they may be something altogether different, but the proceeds from them go towards the cause, you know.
Yeah.
So Comic Relief went through in our country, I think Comic Relief's in America as well, isn't it?
It is,
their own version. You know, they got to a point where they were like, okay, we just do a good song and get celebrities involved, and that's part of the whole campaign. We don't necessarily make the song about the thing we're campaigning about. But this song does, doesn't it? It says it in really stark terms. And it's strange because then you have to...
So it's doing a job of education as much as it's doing a job of
fundraising. But is it
fundraising?
Is it quite doing it either as well as it could have done? Because it's very...
I will say, sorry, Gary, I will say, just to sort of mention again, like I say, I don't have any special knowledge of this, but Bangladesh as a name, as a country...
Yeah.
Is brand new at this point. So actually the word Bangladesh, or the two words as it's rendered here, is something very new. So George saying it out loud so often, I think it's probably quite more important and relevant then than it is to us now, where we've grown up with Bangladesh as a country that exists.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that way of looking at it too.
Yes.
I find the intro... My problem with it is, right, this is my thing. I don't know why I'm feeling so bad about something that's relating to something from 40, 50 years ago. But like, the way that the intro is like... The intro has that feel to it of how many songs start with those spoken intros? It feels like the last line should be, and this is what he said, Bangladesh, blang. You know, I find the juxtaposition of the message delivered in this way, because the song, he's not gone for ballady, he's gone for kind of moody, funky. I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it's, I don't know if the coupling of the words and the song do what they thought it was going to, but you know, do you know what I mean?
I do kind of know
the
what
song
mean,
sounds
yeah.
like something like I Will Survive or It's Raining Men, but it's about Bangladesh.
Yeah.
It's weird. So you know, it's not the motivation of the I'm literally the lyrics coupled with the song, and the you know, he does say Bangladesh a lot, and I hadn't thought of it in that context. That yeah, he does just get that name out there so people are aware of it. So that's good. But it doesn't really go into the merely goes like it's such looks like a mess and never known such distress. It's something we can't neglect. It's very there's not much in it, is there really? It's not like it goes into. Yeah.
No.
I've only given it 50 for lyrics, and because I just think, yeah, I think the song's motivation is fine, but it doesn't really necessarily mean that it's delivered on that level for me. But I mean, the whole idea is great. If we were scoring for ideas to start a new way of helping to support things, then it'd get loads of points.
It would, yes.
So it gets 64 overall.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Good stuff. Right, next then. Mary Had a Little Lamb, Paul McCartney and Wings.
Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow. Everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. And you could hear that singing, la la, la la, la la la.
Mary had a little lamb, Paul.
Did she? What happened?
Its fleece was white as snow.
All right, that's pretty usual for lambs. Nothing special there.
But did you know that everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go?
Ah, committed.
Mm.
Yeah, dedicated, that lamb.
Yeah.
Have we finished this one yet?
Yeah, I'm not going to do the whole thing.
No, I mean the whole song.
Right, so you don't want to even where you want to start.
No, right.
Skip to the end. Yeah.
Okay, I'm now. Right. Ooh, yes. Right, let's get the Frankie Howards out of the way. That's done.
Right.
You know I am not a naysayer for songs for kids.
No.
McCartney songs that are cutesy pie, whatever they are. I generally love them. You know.
Yeah.
We All Stand Together, the Frog Chorus, genuinely one of the best things in the world ever.
Mm-hmm.
This, however, with his fatherhood addled brain, is tedious. And it's, you know, it's a song that sort of pulled the band apart to some extent, Wings, because who wanted to do this in Wings? Paul, that's who.
Yeah.
None of the sort of hard rockers that he'd sort of recruited to be in his band.
Yeah.
I mean, the sort of, you think about the run of singles that they're doing at this point. The single before this is Give Ireland Back to the Irish.
Yeah.
And the single after this is High, High, High.
Yeah.
And this is in the middle. It's like the whiplash you get from that.
It's a strange, yeah.
Intense, reactive, political messaging. This. And then sexy time, rock and roll.
Yeah.
You could argue that this demonstrates yeah. range. But what it does do is demonstrate some, in my opinion, laziness.
Okay. Is that your intro done?
Well, facts are, this is the A side. Little Woman Love is on the B side.
All right.
It's released on the 12th of May, 1972 on Apple. Gets to number 9 in the charts for 11 weeks. Recorded at the end of March 1972 at Olympic Studios.
Little Woman Love is the B side. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
So he hasn't gone for a theme across the single then, if he wanted...
No.
You know. Okay, come on.
Credited to Paul and Linda, produced by Paul with the assistance of Glyn Johns, is worth mentioning. Yeah. I'll talk about that in production. But keep in mind, you know, the McCartney of the early 70s particularly isn't just ex-Beatle Paul, he's also family man Paul.
Mm.
You know, he's married Linda and she's already got a daughter. They have Mary on the 28th of August 1969. So we all have been singing a lot of kids' songs.
Yeah.
And that's what's given rise to this.
Presumably, isn't it? Yeah. I'd never heard this one before, Paul.
Funny that.
Well, you say that, you know, it doesn't seem to really get radio plays, and or at least it hasn't in the last 41 years that I've ever noticed. But you'd think, because it did okay, didn't it? Where did it get in the charts?
It got to number 9.
Got to number 9 in the charts, which is the same. Where did Live and Let Die get in the charts?
I can't remember.
I think that was number 9, Paul. What's going on with the world? But then you think, well, is the McCartney marketing machine just more effective than some of the others?
But it wasn't, though, at the time. I mean, he did what they all did. He put some adverts in the newspaper. I mean, he made 4 music videos for this.
Right.
Which, you know, is another way to drive your bandmates mad, is make them go and do 4 videos where they have to dress up in stupid clothes for this song.
Yeah. It's strange. I mean, let's talk about the music as much as we can. We have a jaunty little version of a nursery rhyme. It really is Mary Had a Little Lamb. But, you know, we'll get onto that as well with the words. Complete with, ukulele or something like a ukulele.
Mandolin.
And la-la-las, and children singing along and giggling, which is all very nice. I mean, I'm surprised this didn't come up on your head ballet podcast at any point. But then it's obviously not persisted, because you'd think, well, this would appear on every children's album or something, wouldn't you? But unless it's a rights thing, it doesn't emerge. I mean, as a parent, you go through a lot of kind of material just trying to find things to play and suitable things. And this has never reared its head anywhere that I've come across until now. You know, so I don't feel like it's, a lot of people will know about this, even though apparently it was number 9 in the charts for however long. I find it very much on the saccharine and cheesy side, which are sweet cheese, Paul. I mean, that's not what you want, is it?
No, not.
Although cheese with sweet bits in it is quite nice sometimes. But anyway, it's just a real plod to get through as well, isn't it?
It commits the worst crime of being boring.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a brief bit at the end where they get some fuzz bass in there, like synth fuzzy bass.
Mm.
But other than that and the sort of the little chord pattern he does at the very end, it just goes along.
It does a little bit of Phantom of the Opera in it for no good reason as well, doesn't it? It goes...
Oh, yeah. And that's all it's... That's literally... That's the hook in this one.
And we know he can do, and his compatriots could do, songs for children really, really well. It's not like we didn't already have Yellow Submarine and Octopus's Garden by this point.
Yeah.
Plus things like All Together Now and the rest, you know. But this sounds... This just is nowhere near the level of those, is it? It's just doesn't walk that line of rock band doing kids' song, which is a line that he almost invented anyway.
Yeah. And, so the weird thing with this is it seems to have been triggered by, you know, Wings is a pretty new affair at this point.
Mm.
You know, they've done Give Ireland Back to the Irish. The band are getting a bit sort of antsy because they haven't really got a proper contract with McCartney.
Right.
And so if they don't work... They all start thinking, because they're session men.
Yeah.
They start thinking, well, I need to go and earn money.
Yeah.
Here, because they're only getting a small amount of money, because all McCartney's actual money is tied up in the litigation for the Beatles and so on. So it seems like he's sort of gone, oh, we better put another single out there. Right, come on, we're going in the studio. And this is what he takes them in to do. But apparently he was sort of saying, oh, look, the charts are full of ballads and novelty songs, so we'll do something that sort of fits that. And it doesn't fit either of those, really.
No.
I mean, the charts at the time, when he would have gone into the studio, I've got them up on the screen now. So number one at this point is Without You by Harry Nilsson.
Right, yeah.
You know, as big a ballad as you can get, really.
Yeah.
But it's got things in there like American Pie by Don McLean. What else have we got on here? Blue is the Colour by the Chelsea football team. So that's what you might call a novelty song.
Novelty song, yeah. But a very specific type of audience of one.
Things like Sweet Talking Guy by the Chiffons, Son of My Father by Chicory Tip, Heart of Gold by Neil Young. Some good songs in the chart at this point. Hmm. Back Off Boogaloo by Ringo.
Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John's version of George's What Is Life, which is really, really good.
There's a lot of Beatle representation in there.
Yeah, but it's not like it's... I mean, Give Ireland Back to the Irish is still in the top 30 at this point.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's...
Yeah, it's not.
It's this sort of... You wouldn't look at that and go, ah, kids' song.
Yeah. But then he got to number 9 with it. So something right. Who knows what? Maybe it's a lot of parents at the time starved of many options of things going, ah, something to play that's acceptable. Now I'll turn it over to Little Woman Love, which isn't an offensive song, but it's not a kid's song.
No.
It's a little kind of boogie jam, isn't it? Anyway, I've given it 45 for music.
It's Paul, Linda and Denny Lane, obviously, is the core of Wings there, with Henry McCullough and Denny Sywell, and then obviously the Little McCartneys singing along.
Yes, I mean, this is the thing. You feel bad, don't you? Because, of course, they had a lovely time. And I imagine this is a very big, lovely thing in their legacy and their history. And if anyone from the McCartney family is listening, we appreciate that. And thank you for listening. And please tell everyone in the world. But, and you know, get in touch. I'm sure no one's listening. But also, to my ears, listening back to it, it's a bit of a strange thing to put amongst his oeuvre of everything else that we've been doing. So on to production then. I quite like the mandolin, did you say it was? Because I thought it was uke, but it's mandolin. It's similar register up there. It sounds nice.
Yeah, just to lift up the chorus bits, which it needs.
I do, again, apologies to any McCartney listening, but I do find the children chorus a bit too loud and mic'd up close, and there's only like... If it was a choir of them, maybe, you know?
I think what's happened here is that they've all got fed up doing the song, the band.
Mm.
And not only they got fed up, Glyn Johns has got fed up and basically gone, right, sod this, I'm off.
Right.
But then he comes back in, like as a professional, he sort of goes, okay, no, I'll go back in, I'll finish the session doing this song with Paul. And the last thing that gets put on is just the McCartneys, the family, come in.
Yeah.
To layer up vocals and chorus stuff. So they have a sort of little closed session without the rest of the band to do all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, sweet. Well, I mean, I've got any... I don't think the production's particularly bad. It is what it is. It's the song that's the problem, isn't it? So 70 for production I've given it.
Yeah, well, I didn't get to mention they've got bongos on it, which you sort of get on the right-hand speaker, I think. And those bongos have been put through a wah-wah pedal.
Oh, well, that's a good bit of production, but I didn't pick up on it.
Well, there you go, see. I think basically
fallen asleep by that point.
All those little overdubs, beyond, say, the mandolin, I would think, feel like just stick stuff on there to try and make it interesting.
Yeah.
It's not interesting. It's not dynamically interesting. It just goes along. It's just commits the crime of being boring.
That's the problem. Okay, well, let's move on to lyrics. So, I had to check because, like a lot of people, you probably know the first couple of verses of Mary Had a Little Lamb and then don't remember all of it. But shall we hear it, Paul? Shall I recite it?
Oh, yes, do it in your best voice.
But I'll just do it in my voice. Mary had a little lamb. His fleece was white as snow. Everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. And you could hear them singing. No, that's... That's me reading the exact... That's part of the lyrics, isn't it? That's not part... So actually, he has got an original lyric, because that's not part of the actual verse, is it?
No.
You can hear them singing, moves on to la, 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 la. He followed her to school one day. It was against the rules. made the children laugh and play to see a lamb at school.
A lamb at school! Imagine!
You could hear them singing, la la, la 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 la. Soon the teacher turned it out. Still it lingered near, waited patiently about till Mary did appear. But the lamb loved Mary so, the eager children cry. And Mary loves the lamb, you know, the teacher did reply. And la 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 and all that. Now all of that, other than the la 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 bit, is the actual poem, isn't it? That's actually it. And I found out, Paul, did you find anything out about the actual poem?
I found out that it was written in 1830 by Sarah Josepha Hale.
And based on a true story.
Based on a true story of lamb school disruption.
I know. I mean, that was the revelation for me. Still, I don't want it anywhere near my rock and roll, thank you very much. No. So I've given it 25 for lyrics because I, you know.
He's basically just taken, he's taken a three stanza poem, not included all of it.
Yeah.
And not got the moral of the thing in there. The moral of Mary had a little lamb, or Mary's lamb as it was originally called, is basically, if you're kind to creatures, if you're kind to something, it will show you kindness in return.
Right.
So be kind and you'll get kindness back. Yeah. Which is why does the lamb follow her around, teacher? Because she's nice to it. And so it cares for her.
Yeah.
She cares for it. It knows it's, you know, that's the moral. He doesn't even get that far.
Oh, never mind. I don't think most people know it past Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow,
I think. She kept it in a bucket and then fill in the rest of it.
Okay, so 25 for lyrics, 46.7 overall. I think we move on to our next one, don't you?
Yeah.
Next, Only You and You Alone, Ringo Starr.
When you hold my hand, I understand the magic that you do. You're my dream come true, my one and only you.
Only you can make this world seem right.
Only you and you alone, Paul,
can explain this song to me. It's a Ringo single from the Ringo heyday.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of this song, Call Me. This is released on the 15th of November 1974. Gets to number 28 in the charts for 11 weeks, associated with the album Goodnight Vienna. It was originally written by someone called Buck Ram. I mean, that's a nickname.
Right.
But produced by Richard Perry, as much of Ringo's stuff is. And we have Ringo on vocals and presumably brushed drums in this. Nope. Harry Nilsson doing backing vocals, as we've had that set up before. Billy Preston on electric piano. I'm assuming it's Klaus on bass. He's not listed in the actual booklet, but it sounds like Klaus on bass, and he's on all the other stuff at this time.
Hmm.
We have Jesse Ed David on electric guitar, Jim Keltner on drums, so a second drums again. We also have someone called Steve Cropper on electric guitar.
Oh, that sounds like a promising young chap.
Yeah, and some fella called John Lennon on acoustic.
Oh.
Which is why it sounds exactly like the start of his arrangement of Stand By Me.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I was going to say. That makes so much sense now. Because what John Lennon said is, what you do, Ringo, right? What you do is you get an old song and you play it a bit like this, and then it's your version of it, all right?
Well, that is essentially what he did. He suggested it for Ringo.
Yeah.
And then came along and played it, and he played it exactly like he plays Stand By Me.
Yeah. The problem with that is what John Lennon's like, what he doesn't know is you have to sing it really, really well in a different kind of way from the original. And I don't think Ringo does on this one.
No, so they've chosen to... Well, they've chosen to sort of soften this song that people know very, very well. I mean...
Yeah.
The Platters version of this, I would say, is probably one of the all-time great vocal harmony records.
And individual vocal performances as well.
Yeah.
Isn't it? From whoever's taking the lead. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but the person who's the main singer as well is...
Tony Williams, I think, is the name of the guy whose sort of voice does the sort of high bits and the sort of cracks. You know, it's a doo-wop classic, and it is so identifiable as a sound of itself that then they decide to give it to Ringo, whose voice bless him, is never going to be like doo-wop histrionic. So they have to sort of soften it down into this version.
Mm. It really doesn't work for me. What I like about this is I like the way they've taken John's suggestion. I think it does work, and I think there is a version of that song. I could imagine that doing a version of this song on on an acoustic in that manner. You know, the manner that they've done it for this version, kind of like that Stand By Me type of chuntery. Well, I can't sing it. I can't sing a guitar, can I? But but the shuffle and the groove is really nice, and the acoustic strumming and the beat, I think that's great. The
electric piano on it, I think, is really good. I like the little piano flourishes on there. They're sort of little harp-like bits.
But Ringo sings it high and flat.
Yeah,
and with a soft phone, it doesn't work for his voice. And I haven't really got much else to say about it because as good as the backing song is and the backing vocals, and there's a really good band here doing a really good version of it, and then they've had to stick Ringo over the top of it. Not just doesn't suit him at all. We know that his voice has to be right for he has to have the right songs for his voice, and this isn't it.
And even Harry Nilsson's backing vocals on this are a bit lackluster. And we know that Harry Nilsson has got one of the all-time great voices and can do those backing vocal arrangements astonishingly well.
I find there's a problem that the backing vocals, even if they're lackluster, are better. That you don't really want your backing vocalist sounding so much more proficient than your lead singer too much, do you? I know Ringo has big choruses behind them, but because he's not hitting it, it's kind of like, oh. It makes it sound like bad karaoke, I think.
That's the risk when you do cover versions, and I think in this case it doesn't come off.
Doesn't make it his own.
No.
Because it doesn't suit him. I think there's a version there like this. See, when John does Stand By Me, he does it in a way that makes it his own, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He doesn't have that same voice. He doesn't try and do that same voice, nor does he try and shy away from it. He just does it with power in his own way, and it kind of works really well. It just doesn't work here. So I think, unfortunately, I'm giving it 54 for music, because I think it just really, really suffers for it in this case, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Oh, it's a shame. I mean, what I do want to mention, though, is, you know, the Platters, who did this originally.
Yeah.
Interesting little side thing is, in the 50s, you would very often have singles put out by non-white groups on what they called race records, or put out on labels described as race records.
Right.
And so they would be sort of, you know, the musical output was segregated, let alone performance spaces, etc., etc. But Buck Ram, when he made this record with the Platters, basically said, I don't want this out on your race record label, put this out on your usual label. And what that means is it gets into the marketplace for a broader white audience as well, and makes it easier for that audience to access this sort of black vocal music. So this is quite an important bit of music in itself. The history of Only You is much more interesting than Ringo's version of it.
Absolutely. And I mean, really, that original vocal performance, it's just so ridiculous to say, yeah, that's one Ringo can do. It's like, come on, it's so good. Really, you know, I went and listened back to it because it's like, oh, hang on a second, you know, because I was thinking, I know the song, and then I listened to it, like, no, this is all about an amazing vocal at the top of it.
But even the backing's like, you know, those opening, it's like, you know, something good's coming.
Yeah, it's a different song. So, let's go on to production. Is it, is there something like the vibraphone or something? Is there a vibraphone?
No, I think that's just the electric piano.
Electrical piano.
Yes, that's good old Billy Preston.
I like that when that joins in. I think that's lovely sound. I really like that sound, and I think it sticks really nice. And as I say, I like the band playing this song. It's just all for naught when the final layer doesn't deliver.
Yeah.
I think the backing vocals are a little too high in places, but that might be just in contrast to Ringo's kind of thin lead, meaning that the backing just feels fuller than the lead, which makes it out of whack. Yeah, like I said, I think if Lennon had sang it a bit like Stand By Me, it would have been a good song. So I really think there was a version there to be had, but not this. So I've given it 78 for production, because I think it's quite a nicely produced thing, other than the main vocal.
Yeah, I agree with you. The one thing I think is a bit weird is, like, you've got Steve Cropper playing on this. Steve Cropper. Mm. And he's sort of, his guitar playing's just tucked away in the sort of right-hand side of the mix. You can barely hear it. And you know it's Steve Cropper because he plays some things where you go, that's Steve Cropper playing guitar. Mm. And I don't know why he's on that and not up front a bit more. Or why they didn't
it's
give him
a... It's a great band, isn't it?
Or why they didn't give him a solo instead of saying to Ringo, do a spoken word section.
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot to mention that bit, yeah. I don't think that helps at all. Does it?
I mean, if you're not confident in your vocal to the point where you have to do a verse, spoken
Only
word...
You. Yeah. If you want one of our listeners who listens to this, I'm sure there are, because that's the kind of thing I do, listens to this but doesn't necessarily listen to the songs other than the clip I put on before we start talking, go and listen to it, because then you can hear... go and listen to it with the Ringo spoken verse and see if that really adds to it or not. Okay, so yeah, 78 for production. So let's go on to the lyrics. I mean, he's tricky, is our Ringo, because he knows, well, when I do this cover version in however many years' time, God, how long is it now? 50 years' time or so, or just a bit under, there's going to be someone doing something called a podcast, where in this series they've decided to score lyrics even if I didn't write them. And therefore he's going to get a lot of nice points, isn't he, for this? Because they're lovely classic song lyrics, classic love song lyrics, aren't they? You know?
Yeah, yeah, they are.
I'm not going to go into the big detail about them because he didn't write them. But, I mean, I think there's nothing in there other than nice little rhyming couplets that are lovely.
Yeah.
He's going to get... I'm going to give it 79.5 for lyrics.
Oh, fair enough.
Which means the song actually gets 70.5 altogether.
It was a hit, though, you know. I mean, number 28 in the charts is not, you know...
Yeah.
It's more than we'll ever have.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's absolutely... What we have to accept with all this is I pass judgment on something that I've got no right to at all. Yeah. Well, I have got the right. I've got every right. I've got every right to pass judgment on it because it's just my opinion. But it's a... You know, I guess we're always judging things by what they were all capable of, which is number ones and lots of them.
Yeah.
And with broad appeal, not just value for certain people. Anyway... 70.5 altogether. Let's go on to next song, which is Old Siam, Sir Paul McCartney. Old Siam, Sir.
Right. Well, let's move on from Mary Had a Little Lamb to another Paul McCartney and Wings song from the album Back to the Egg. The B-side of this is a track called Spin It On. This was released on the 1st of June 1979, so this is quite late in the decade, out on Parlophone. It gets to number 35 in the charts.
Yeah.
Recorded in... June and July of 1978 up in Paul's studio in Scotland, written by Paul, produced by Paul and Chris Thomas. And it's the lineup of Wings, which is Paul, Linda and Denny Lane, with Lawrence Juber and Steve Holly. And all I can think when I hear this is, presumably Paul had just heard My Sharona by The Knack.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Bom,
I was trying to
bom,
think.
Bom, 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 yeah. Bom. Before he started recording it.
That's what it is.
This is another bit of McCartney stuff that baffles me. It's another, like, production of, like, doom-laden madness with just shit lyrics. Sorry for swearing.
Gosh.
But shit lyrics to the point where Paul's still embarrassed about them to this day.
Right, okay.
Even in the lyrics book, he talks about it.
But even
he rates the lyrics third after the feel of the song and the attack of the vocal.
Well, I forgive any song that mentions Scarborough in it.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And sound a bit like Ghostbusters in places.
It does sound a little bit like Ghostbusters in places.
Which is not something that you'd expect to hear, is it?
No.
I'm going to write a song. It's going to sound a bit like a movie theme that hasn't been written for another 10 years and mention the birthplace of a podcast that Ringo was telling me about that he's been covering
Ringo's,
songs to get score points
Ringo's
on.
Ringo's future podcast predictions.
Yeah, they all got very meta back then.
Mm.
Yeah, Scarborough. He says Scarborough in it, which...
Well, wait till we get to the lyrics and we can talk about...
I will get to that, yeah.
The best seaside place.
But yeah, the Brit... So I got a hint that you might have not have liked this when the pick came out of the bag and we saw the McCartney ones and you were like, oh, it's not going to be a great week for McCartney. So I was braced for it to be worse than this, actually, for me, but it's not. Because I like the bit... The bridge bit that sounds a bit like the Ghostbusters, and it actually gets me going a little bit. That bit, I like it. I quite like what comes out of the bridge too, with the kind of smooth, dark vibe to it. I like the kind of. I'm working backwards for some reason because the bit that's obviously I think the hardest bit to swallow is the verses, but mainly because he's singing it an octave too high again. He's gone weird, Paul, singing at the top of his voice when he didn't really need to.
Hmm.
Like, he felt like he could have found a key that worked better because it's not allowing him to open up his voice in the way that he can because he's doing it from a standing... It's like a standing jump, isn't it? He's not doing it from a run-up. It's not a song that's building to it. It just starts a bit high and whiny for him. I don't know why he's just started doing this. McCartney suddenly in a random picker started singing too high and writing bad children's songs in the last few... kind of songs he's had out, other than Live and Let Die, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I quite like the octave jumping bit as well, but now I've realised that octave jumping bit is what you've just said. It's just My Sharona, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, and, but I like the... I'm pretty fond of the big instrumental sections that follow it in all their overly dramatic glory.
Yeah,
with
I
big...
like those bits.
Yeah.
It just doesn't... I just find the lyrics for this are so baffling.
Yeah. Well, the lyrics, we'll have to look at them. But, I mean, musically, I can't understand a world where if Mary Had a Little Lamb got to number 9...
This got to number 35.
Yeah. And if Ringo's... Where did Ringo's end? 28. End up? 28. A badly sung version of a good song. We get... I mean, this isn't great. This isn't great for his voice. I think the music part, the biggest problem is Paul singing again on that verses. I just think it's a bit... it doesn't quite get there quite right. So I've given it 75.5 for music.
It's an interesting thing here. I mean, it's sort of minimal and over the top as well because most of it is just one chord.
Yeah.
Like this sort of root note driven... pedal note thing dun, 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 until the sort of descending parts come in. So there's sort of... Yeah. It's groove again, but not like the groovy... I don't know. It's,
it has
I
no
find
chorus
it very
again.
Hard to understand this.
It has no chorus as such because it's it goes into an instrumental instead of a chorus. So it goes into... It kind of has an A section, a bridge, and then it goes into the big instrumental bit, and then that turns into the... Dun, 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 dun. And then it goes back again and starts again, doesn't it?
He says, I think the reason I'm ever so slightly embarrassed by it is that it just doesn't really make much sense. And then he goes on to to sort of talk himself out of that.
Okay.
But,
well, there you go. It's interesting that it ends up in there.
He didn't include Mary Had a Little Lamb in his lyrics book, I'll tell you that much.
Production then, similar note to the last one. I really like the guitar sounds in this. I like the bass. I think the clav doing the little pattern on the keys is quite nice. The the kit is nice and crisp and driven. The big bass note that leads the bridge is. I mean, is that a synth or something? Is there a synth that comes
presumably,
in?
Presumably, yeah.
Is good too. I like the big proggy sound to it. So that gives it 78.5 for production.
Yeah, in some ways it's a pretty standard rock mix for a pretty basic rock song, but that's quite good Because what you want in that circumstance is good sounding guitars, good sounding bass, good sounding drums, and they do that.
Yeah,
there's a drum sounds really good on it.
Yeah, you see, you're turning yourself around for you've accepted.
No,
that the
production
music
wise, I don't think it's bad. I like the idea that they have the bit where the little harmony guitars come in and they do that really well.
Yeah, it's good.
But they do something weird in the choruses, I'm saying in air quotes here, where they stick another hi-hat in there as well to give it a bit of energy that sort of in one of the speakers.
Are you talking about the weighted round? Do you think, think the chorus is the way she weighted round in what? See, that doesn't sound like a chorus to me. It just sounds like a bridge, a bit that's leading to the, the chorus is the chord change into the, but it isn't because there isn't any music there. But anyway, 78.5 production, so we really are just the main thing that you seem to have the biggest problem with, Paul, and we'll explore why, is the lyrics. I mean, firstly, they get bonus points because they mention my birth town of Scarborough, as he says. Mm-hmm. So it gets bonus points for that. It does hint at the kind of McCartney storytelling more than some of the ones we've covered, which have been a bit more, I don't know.
I mean, it does, yeah. I mean, he sort of says, it's a representation of an Asian immigrant in the UK and the song gives a sense of her culture shock. But that is retrofitting it a little bit,
yeah,
I think. And he does actually say elsewhere, these could still be dummy lyrics from, like, you know, where you fill out the sort of words for a song with words that you're going to get rid of later and fix
up. He never did. Yeah, which we sometimes think he does, don't we? Sometimes.
Was like, his Hey Jude story. It's, I'll fix that. But there's also this issue. It starts with In a Village in Old Siam, Sir. Then we get the song name, Old Siam, Sir. So Siam's Thailand. And that's not what Thailand's called. Thailand at this point is called Thailand.
Yeah.
It's, it does sound like the song could be set at any time, but why would someone from Thailand be going, like, do you know what, we're going to go to the UK and for some reason ping pong between Walthamstow and Scarborough?
Where's Walthamstow?
It's North London.
Yeah, okay. Now, of course it is. I have a friend who used to, may still well live there. I've stayed in Walthamstow. Yeah, it's. So as far as I can make it out, Paul, this is what happens, right? It seems to tell a story of a lady from Siam.
Thailand.
Old Siam, or Thailand as it's called, coming to the UK, meeting a man, getting married to the man who took pictures of her, I think. I think it's some inference that he took her rushes to show his mam, sir. So I think, because he said she met a fellow who made her reel. Now, I don't know.
Like a film.
Like a film, and took her rushes. Rushes are rushes of a film, aren't they? To show his mum. Met his dad at the wedding meal. So then it's like, well, then he got married to her. And then it made lots of money. Making lots of money?
She
decided the only answer was to get up a pile of dough. And then it becomes... But that being a tale of woe, as news got home to her relatives that she was doing maybe nudie films or something. I don't know at that point. Because a relative told her man, sir, he directed her not to stay. So she was trying to get some money and then someone told
her... Gary, you're going to just drive yourself mad. No mind can comprehend this.
What does it mean? But Paul, it's got Scarborough in it, so...
It does have Scarborough in it several times. And he doesn't even pronounce it in a stupid way like he does on one instance of Walthamstow.
He does do Scarborough. He does a br, like he does it. He's going around in Scarborough.
We know he's been to Scarborough many times by this point.
Has he? Well, he would have with the band, wouldn't he? With the band,
we talked about it when he popped in there on the Wings thing.
Yeah, so I've given it 67 for lyrics, which is probably more generous than it needed, but... it doesn't really bother me. I'm more bothered about him singing it too high, to be honest. It is daft, but I do know what you mean, though. It's the kind of thing where if I wrote a song where, for some reason, the phrasing of the first line was In a Village in Old Siam, Sir, I'd be thinking, well, I can't use that. And I'd be saying to people, like, can you think of something that fits Old Siam, Sir? I am what I am, Sir. I am, you'd be trying to think what that's a placeholder, and then... And he never changed it and spun it out from there. 73.7 overall.
Blimey.
Okay. Finally, working class hero, John Lennon.
A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool.
Working class hero, Paul?
Yeah, let's say I am.
Okay.
declare myself. No, working class hero, this is included as the flip side to Imagine, as in when it was released in the UK. Mm. As we said, it was released in the mid-70s, unlike in America, or it comes out at the time of the album. So 24th of October 1975, we know that Imagine gets to number 6 for 11 weeks on its initial release in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Imagine itself keeps re-entering the charts over the years. Again, this would therefore be associated with the Shaved Fish compilation album.
Right.
But yeah. This is recorded end of September, start of October in 1970. Written by John, obviously. Produced by John and Yoko and Phil Spector. I mean, this is about as far away from a Phil Spector production as you can get. Mm. One person, one guitar.
Yeah, he didn't really need to be there, did he?
He probably wasn't, knowing Phil.
Yeah.
You know what Phil's like, off murdering. or something.
Yeah.
Right. Folk music.
Yeah.
And you know what? The weird thing with this is, I've known this song a long time, obviously, and gets included in lots of, you know, as a sort of one of those symbolic Lennon songs.
Compilations and things, yeah.
I've never really listened closely to the production of it.
Mm.
And it's a bit rubbish. It's odd. It's not particularly well recorded. But I don't really think that's sort of the point of it as much as it's John getting his words out.
Well, you're jumping way ahead, Paul.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, there's not much to say, particularly musically, is there?
Well, there isn't, but, that, you know.
It's very sort of standard folk.
We'll go through guitar. The motions anyway, just for the folks listening. Just, okay. Yeah, music-wise, it's a folk staple, isn't it? It's a minor chord that bounces down to the major chord below it and then back up again. And occasionally, they throw in a third chord in that pattern. You know,
yeah.
I imagine it's something like A minor, G and D, or something like that.
Spot on.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's great. I love an A minor chord. If you listen to and preferably buy my album, Rusty Old World, you'll find that the titular track is in that... Oh, actually, I don't know if it is in that key. No, it is. It depends if I capoed it, but that's what it was written in. A minor chord bounces down to G, that kind of thing, that kind of vibe.
Do you do the little hammer-on thing that,
yeah,
that John
yeah,
does?
Yeah. Yeah, I do a bit of that. I mean, it's hard not to when you play that kind of pattern, isn't it? It just lends itself to it. But it's not trying to be this, that's for sure. But the music exists really to carry, I mean, that form of music exists to carry lyrics and a melody, really. You can do a lot of different things over it, and that's what he uses it for.
Does it in a very John way as well, in that he doesn't necessarily do it strictly to a repeating pattern. You know, some of the chord changes are just a little bit off where you'd expect them to be.
Yeah.
And things like that, which is a very John thing to do.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but it's nothing but him. It's just his guitar and his voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it is. So there's not much there musically, but let's face it, I think it's effective because it's a vehicle for his lyrics. It's not something he did all the time, and this is just one example of it. This is the one time, probably, I think, that he was just, I'm going to do this kind of sounding song for this thing. You know, I mean, yeah, he's played with those kind of chords before, but not, you know, I think you get one of these, don't you, maybe? And this is John's.
Hmm.
And so I'm going to even give it 80 for music.
Fair enough.
Because I think it's the right music for what's happening.
I mean, this is where your stupid system becomes even stupider, isn't it? In that you're comparing something like the production of Old Siam, Sir, musically.
Yeah, well, we're talking about music.
The musical decisions
and
that with different people playing and all the musical content
against it's
one
farce,
man with a guitar.
It?
It's a sham. It's a fool's errand. I don't know what we're doing.
What are we doing?
Oh, I'm off.
No, let's carry on.
Nearly there.
Yeah. So production then. So this is interesting then, because the only thing I find a problem with it, talking about the right production for the right song, is that there's just a strange thing where it moves into the centre of the stereo halfway through and back again.
Yeah, there's a really, really clumsy edit.
Is it, yeah, is it two, I was thinking, is it, I was going to say, is it two takes or is it just a weird mixing choice that it...
No, it's basically, he's recorded it as he wants it to go, which is what you hear at the start and the end, and then come away from it and go, oh, I've missed a verse out.
Right.
And he's had to record an edit piece to stick in. But of course, particularly with something like an acoustic guitar on your voice, it's so much matters about where you are in relationship to the microphone.
Yeah.
So he's in the same studio with the same microphone, the same guitar, but all he needs to be is an inch or two left, right, up, down, forward, back. And yeah, it totally changes the thing. And so you have this really obvious point where they've edited in this missing bit of verse into the song.
The main thing that's obvious about it is they seem to have panned it in the stereo as well or something.
Well, something's happened, yeah. The relationship to the voice and the guitar, something changes. It's like the phase changes or something. But yeah. I'd never noticed it before until I did the close listening.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, there is an ultimate mix now that presents the vocal in a better way. But actually, I don't think it's a very good recording of either guitar or voice.
Oh, dear. I didn't have that problem apart from the obvious cut or whatever it was there. But apart from that, I think because of it lays in bare without any processing on his voice, which is unusual, isn't it? It is just his voice.
Yeah.
It's not, which I think is good for that. You know, this is, we've had some of his B-side stuff where, you know, it's been a bit more, well, this is a rough take. It's meant to sound like a rough take. But in this case, I think, just hearing John Lennon playing a guitar like you would do if he was down an acoustic night is good to hear.
Yeah, given how often he wanted his voice changed or altered or doubled.
He's gone completely the other way and said you can hear everything, which is why he doesn't get away with that edit as much, because you wouldn't notice that if there was other stuff going on and lots of stuff. You probably wouldn't.
I don't know why he wouldn't have done another full take. Maybe he did and just felt that the first one was better and stuck the right
Phil
bit in.
Probably said he could fix that in the mix. Just got to, when I'm back.
Book the orchestra!
Yeah. So I'm giving it 80 for production because I think it's suitable for its...
People are going to think I hate this song, and I don't, but I think you're bonkers to give it that much.
Well, I have given it that much. So what have we got now then?
Lyrics. They're sort of quite important in this song.
Yeah, so the lyrics then I think is I mean, I guess this one divides people. I've got quite a lot to say on this one.
Well, let me just say up front, it has been one of the things that's been a proper stick to beat John with. Mm. Because if you say you're a working class hero and you're a millionaire, it's a bit like with Imagine No Possessions, etc., etc.
Yeah.
People are like, yeah, but you're a millionaire. You can't be a working class hero. And also, you weren't really working class in Liverpool. Yeah. It's like, well, that's not, again, that's just taking it too literally, the statement and the phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yes, I don't think he necessarily got it spot on in representation of himself. Just coming from Liverpool doesn't make you working class. But
no.
But it's just not that simple.
But what was his? What did his mum? Oh, hang on, his mum. What did his aunt Mimi and his?
Well, Uncle George.
Uncle George
Well, Uncle George died, and Aunt Mimi had lodgers.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of thing. There's no point. I don't think there's any point actually tying his family background into this because I don't think that's really what he's talking about here.
No.
But that's what people use to the stick to beat him with.
I like it generally. But I mean, for the balance of it, as I get older and genuinely have spent 20 plus years of my life working so far, and I'm bound to carry on doing that for probably, you know, another 20 or more, then, you know, I do approach it slightly differently than when I was younger. So I think it is easier when you're young yourself or a massively famous rock star to, it's not so much calling himself a hero, it's the thing about saying that inference that, you know, we're all being taken for mugs as working class people. you know. They tell you this, they tell you that, and they make you watch. They keep you doped with religion and sex and TV and you know, like there's some outside force doing that rather than the fact that, you know, I mean, I sympathise with that from the point of view of wealth distribution is completely back to front and all the wrong way around. But still, although there shouldn't be the concentration of wealth that exists, the world, people do need to work for there to be a world, and not everyone is, you know, if everyone, you know, that thing, I have to pitch it really. That thing, I like the idea, when I was younger, I liked more the ideals of, you know, we don't, you know, why can't everyone just be more free and more able to do what they want? But if that was the case, nothing would happen or function, would it? You know, I work in jobs now I work in a job that has to happen because people need the thing that I work for, and people, you know, I do agree there's certain parts of the world that jobs that maybe don't need to exist, and there's this idea of like we're all mugs because we go to work five days a week or more, and or we come home and we slouch in front of the telly, and it's what they want to keep us to keep us compliant, but it's actually what the world needs unless something big changes. And I don't think we're mugs. I just think that's the truth. Unless you've got a lot of money already, or you happen to earn a lot of money, life is work, and there does need to be downtime and distractions because that's what we need. So it's hard. It's hard that as I get older, I think slightly differently about the message in it.
I think the problem is it's very hard to discuss this. Obviously, Lennon was asked about it many, 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 many times, and he would give, you know, various statements about it and about what it means in terms of him and what it means in terms of people and stuff like that. And we couldn't possibly go through all of that stuff now.
Yeah.
It's a funny one. I think it's too much to debate it really here.
Yeah. We'd be stuck into it for ages, wouldn't we?
Yeah. There's certain things that leap out at me that are always sort of, that do strike me as still true and pretty universal. You know, don't be too smart, but don't be too stupid. You know, make sure you're, you know, that's, most people have had some experience of that at some point, especially at school.
Well, I imagine school in the 60s and 70s as well gets progressively worse than
40s and 50s here as well.
Well, 40s and 50s,
But yeah, it's a funny thing for him who never actually had to pick a career.
Well, yeah, that's the bit, you know, isn't it? You know, but then doesn't mean he doesn't get to talk about it.
He doesn't get to have opinions about it, and he doesn't. It's not that he doesn't get to have opinions about it or see what's happening or have an opinion on it. I don't know. It's a funny one. There's two swear words in this, so he must be a very rude man.
Yeah, I mean that's another thing as well. I like hearing him open up like that, you know, in that way, and just lay it out like that. It's just, you know, I know what you mean about the hate if you're clever and the despise a fool. You know, you can get low aspiration, or you can get told off for being big headed and all sorts of things, and you get things like that will stick with you for your whole life. And then you get, you know, but when they say they hurt you at home and they hit you at school, obviously that's, you know, that can happen, and that's a personal experience to him that would make me feel differently about things if that had been the case. Luckily we were just beyond that in school, weren't we, as far as our generation, but it was only recently kind of being able to punish kids at school was only just recently kind of abolished when we were growing up, I think.
Yeah, well,
I think it was still common practice, and maybe even a bit when we were growing up, I think.
Probably, yeah. As I say, you'd have to pick this apart line by line, and then you'd end up. But then everyone would be bringing their own individual interpretation to it, and maybe that's the point. I don't know. I mean, I think you're going to have to try and view these lyrics in the holistic sense for how you react to them.
Yes, exactly. And but also I'm scoring them for the thought they provoke, so I'm giving them 83.5 for lyrics, because I think that's the point of it, you know. It's a song that provokes thought, so it's that's good. That's what we like. So that gives it 81.2 altogether, Paul.
Fair enough. That wasn't as funny as me doing Spanish Flea Jerusalem, was it? Talking about that.
No. Well, we got stuck into something else, didn't we, like this? Right. Oh, it was another Lennon one.
Was it Imagine?
It was Imagine. And you said, I don't think we should talk about this anymore. And someone on Twitter very nicely said, I thought it was great to hear you talk about it. And yeah, offered their thoughts, which was lovely. I think it was Gillian.
Yes, I think it was Gillian Ryan.
Thank you for that. Okay, so let's do the non-charters first, and we'll do a top 20. So we'll do everything that didn't fall into the top 20, then we'll do a top 20. So at number 78, we have Paul McCartney with Mary Had a Little Lamb. At number 65, we have George Harrison, Bangladesh. At number 50, we have Ringo Starr, Only You and You Alone. And at number 39, we have Old Siam, Sir, Paul McCartney. And Wings. Let's do a top 20 then, shall we?
Go for it.
At number 20, number 9 Dream, John Lennon. At number 19, My Love, Paul McCartney. At number 18, Working Class Hero, John Lennon. At number 17, George Harrison, My Love. At number 16, Ringo Starr, Back Off Boogaloo. At number 15, Power to the People, John Lennon. At number 14, Jet, Paul McCartney. At number 13, Woman, John Lennon. At number 12, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, John Lennon. At number 11, Cold Turkey, John Lennon. At number 10, Yoko Ono, Kiss Kiss Kiss. At number 9, Give Peace a Chance, John Lennon. At number 8, John Lennon, Stand By Me. At number 7, Loving Song, Paul McCartney. At number 6, Band on the Run, Paul McCartney. At number 5, John Lennon, Just Like Starting Over. At number 4, Mull of Kintyre, Paul McCartney. At number 3, Paul McCartney, Another Day. At number 2, Live and Let Die, Paul McCartney. And at number 1, John Lennon, Imagine.
Righto.
So there we go. So it just made it into the chart, top 20 at least. We had one this week, so that was good. And we'll be back as normal next week.
We will.
Bye-bye.
Good Beatles.